Blog Talk Radio.
Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark.
Sports fans, I am JP coming to you live from beautiful South Denver. On the phone lines tonight as my guest host, as always, Mr. Mark Ademius, Mr. Mark Fiore. Mark, how's everything going up there in Westminster?
Well, we got you tongue-tied. It's Mark Ademius, and the last name is Fiore, but you know that because you say it all the time.
I know that.
I'm just getting so excited for Game 7.
Just
be tired.
I mean, who isn't?
I mean, this is crazy stuff we got going on. We got game sevens going on. We got game sixes going on. We got some huge contracts being signed. We got teams being changed. We've got teams being eliminated. And it's also important to note that I'm playing against Nate Dogg of South Dakota in fantasy baseball and destroying him. And also the Kind Buddies started their season with a 10-7 win in their title defense championship year. So things are going great. How are you doing?
Congratulations on the W there last night for the Kind Buddies. Always a good time when see you guys win. I want to bring in our special guest, Mr. South Dakota, Nate Double G. Nate, how you doing?
Fellas, thanks a lot for having me on tonight. Lots of sports to talk about. Some great games on tonight, and we've got a full docket.
Yes, we do. And did anyone mention tomorrow's Friday the 13th? Can you feel the groove, or am I nuts?
Not only is it Friday the 13th, it's also a full moon.
That is correct. And the freaks will come out at night. And I don't know. I might be one of those freaks.
The crazies will be out. The crazies will be out.
Got to start it right off the bat. Let's go with one of our hometown teams. The DU Pioneers men's lacrosse team is the number 2 seed in the national tournament behind Maryland, the number 1 seed. The Terrapins out of the Big Ten Conference took the number 1 seed. The Denver Pioneers took the number 2 seed. Now, guys, DU actually got upset in the Big East final here at Peter Barton Stadium by Marquette 10-9. In your opinion, is it good or bad for them?
Well, I mean, as long as they're not eliminated from contention for it, losses are almost always a good thing because they always kind of remind you of what your weaknesses are and also can help to kind of engender that killer instinct that ends the game, that take-them-down mentality. And so it's usually a good thing. I mean, we've seen that in professional sports, especially in fall, right? You have a team that goes undefeated for most of the way, and then they kind of lose their edge when they go into a game and they feel pressure. But you get a team that takes that loss that really pisses them off, and that seems to really kind of fire them up. And so my hope is it does that for DU and they can ride that to a title.
Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, well said, Mark. I agree 100%. You know, we saw it with the New England Patriots a few years back in the NFL, you know, the 16-0 season. And, yeah, I think that's what DU needs is a wake-up call. So we hope to see them rebound quickly and take it home for the second year in a row.
Well, gentlemen, I agree with you 100%. DU coasted through most of the regular season except for one game against Notre Dame at Notre Dame. They had a big lead in the game. They gave up 4 goals in a span of 53 seconds and basically had to pull it out in overtime, which they have now beaten Notre Dame in overtime, I think, 6 straight times over the past 4 years. 2 in semifinal action.
Is Notre Dame traditionally a strong lacrosse school?
They are becoming one of the stronger powerhouses of lacrosse. DU skated through the schedule. They hit a stumbling block. This is the funny thing. In an up-and-coming program, they went down to play in the Texas shootout, and they stumbled along the way against my hometown team, the Penn State Nittany Lions, knocked them off in Texas. That was their only loss of the season coming into the Big East tournament. So I think this brought them back down to earth, realizing that they actually have to show up to play every game now. So I think it's a great thing. So, guys, let's jump right into some really big Major League Baseball stuff. We're getting ready to start Game 7 here. We're going to hit the NHL in just a couple minutes. Mark, why don't you start us off in the Major League Baseball?
All right. Well, before we do that, I do have a trivia question for you guys. I'm sure one of you will be able to get this right. Who is the greatest player in the history of Polk High football?
Nate, you want to take that one?
I have no idea, Mark.
You guys are killing me. He scored four touchdowns in one game.
Now, let me since I'm watching TV, let me put my hand down the front of my pants here and see if a big red-headed lady is walking in some high heels and some spandex. And I'm going to say Mr. Al Bundy.
That's right. the greatest player in Polk High history. Four touchdowns and one pick. I just thought I'd have a little fun with you guys. I'm impressed that you had it. Nate, I'm a little disappointed in you. But anyway, to hop over to baseball, first news I think is probably the most important thing, and this really has a big effect on in terms of like causing some domino effects, and that is that Steven Strasburg has signed a 7-year contract for $175 million, so not nearly the kind of money that, let's say, Zach Greinke got, but he's now locked up in a National for probably most of his career, and they're a team that is having a terrific year. So, you know, Nate, what do you think? I mean, is this a good signing for the Nationals?
I think it's a fantastic deal considering what some of the deals were signed in the offseason with guys like Giancarlo Stanton getting over $30 million a year on average. $175 million seems like a bargain for one of the top 10 pitchers in the game right now. He's been off to a fantastic start this year. I believe he's 5-0, Mark. Correct me if I'm wrong. And the Nationals are off to a great start this year in a good battle with the New York Mets. But I think that's a great deal for them. He's in the prime of his career, and they're going to keep chugging along. It's funny, the Nationals have been such favorites the last couple of years. They're flying a little bit under the radar this year, so maybe this is the time for them to rise up and finally take one home.
You know, I could see that being the case. And, I mean, Strasburg is pitching like a true number one pretty much for the first time since the shutdown year when he was absolutely going crazy and they decided to bench him in favor of, you know, preserving his arm. So I don't know if, you know, I mean, who got the bargain here? I mean, his ERA is 2.76, so it's a good ERA. He's got a 5-0 record, so that's pretty good. But, you know, I mean, what if they get the Steven Strasburg that they got the last 3 years? I mean, JP, think of it this way. If you spend that much money on that pitcher, and let's say Max Scherzer, who's your other big pitcher, gets hurt, now have you handicapped yourself for too much going down the stretch, especially since you know next year, this offseason, you have to sign Bryce Harper. And you're looking at about $500 million.
You know, that's an interesting question because right now there's a lot of people out there that might be willing to pay the price tag for Bryce Harper. I've been just kind of fishing around certain websites, and there's people saying, why not Bryce Harper? Especially a lot of the teams that have a lot of salary cap gone and saying, why don't we go out there and get it? So, you know, it's hard to say off of Scherzinger's 20 strikeouts last night. You know, I think they got him at a pretty much a really good deal compared to what some of the other people got. But you're right. The domino effect is going to start happening here real soon in this offseason. I hate to say it. You know, with everybody getting paid what they're getting paid, it's once the first domino falls, we know they all fall. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, especially midway through the season.
I see what could really happen here is they've got a good team going. They got a good thing going right now. They're benefiting from the fact that the Mets just can't seem to get things going, even though they've got that amazing pitching staff. And if they pick up two big hitters, let's say, in the offseason, or maybe bring a couple guys up from the minors who are finally ready, the Mets could take hold of that division. And the Nationals could have spent so much money on three players that they can't fill out the rest of their roster. And maybe they aren't competitive as much. I mean, there's no salary cap, but owners do have a limit to how much money they're going to spend unless they're in New York or L.A. So, you know, I mean, maybe do you think there's any chance that that becomes a problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they have to take into consideration. The Nationals, I think they have some pretty deep pockets there in our nation's capital. But like you said, it's not the L.A. Dodgers. It's not the New York Yankees. So this Bryce Harper deal is going to be, you know, a big – it's no one raises the Mercury like Bryce Harper has the last few years. I mean, what is he, 23 years old, 40 homers last year, batted 330-something. I mean, the kid is dynamic. So it's going to be a, you know, it's going to be a big decision coming up for the Nationals. You know, do they ponder trading him and just stockpiling that minor league system? You know, the Yankees, the Red Sox could be players and something like that. And JP brought up a great point, I think, with the salary that he's going to command. I mean, he could be sports' first million-dollar man. I mean, what they got Strasburg for $25 million. I could see Harper commanding at least as
well. You know, your question is Bryce Harper better than Barry Bonds was? Is he worth more to a team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the question. It's hard to say at this point in the young man's career. Being only 23, I mean, he has the upside of a Barry Bonds, but he hasn't done it for very long. And as we saw in seasons past, he plays the game with a ferocity that could lead him to some major injuries. I know he toned things down a little bit last year, and that enabled him to stay healthy, but I don't know if he can repress that forever. He's such a fiery player.
Well, and we know he's got the asshole attitude down of a Barry Bonds. So, you know, he's already got he's taking one step in the right direction there. Real quick, I know this wasn't on our notes, fellas, but this is something that I heard raised this morning, and I thought it was a very interesting idea. And that is, Anaheim Angels are not doing well. They're not playing well. They're not winning games. Their pitching staff is getting very old, and their good pitchers that they do have, Haney and Garrett Richards, both look like they're going to need Tommy John surgery. So their top two pitchers are going to be gone. They lost Simmons, their shortstop, for most of the year. I know Mike Trout is an amazing player, and he puts butts in the seats. But is it worth contemplating trading him to pick up some serious minor league talent to bring up over the next 2 years, but, you know, instead of wasting away his career when you can't compete? I mean, is there any chance they would do that? JP, do you think that – I mean, do you trade a superstar like that?
Oh, I do it in a second. You're looking at finishing probably last, and you need prospects. I mean, the whole thing with Major League Baseball is you need prospects in your system or you're not going anywhere, because when people go down, you need to be able to bring people up that can fill in for them while they're down. And that's the big thing. And for Mike Trout, you're going to get a lot of good prospects.
Yeah.
Do you think you get five prospects for anything, Nate?
I think you can easily get five prospects.
Absolutely, I think you can. I mean, it just depends on who the trade partner is. But, I mean, the question here, guys, is obviously can you compete for a championship with the current team? The Angels look to be like has-beens to me. You know, Pujols is kind of past his prime. That lineup is not nearly what it was 2 years ago. The pitching staff is kind of taking a nosedive. Garrett Richards, their ace, is out for, I think he's got Tommy John, so he's out for the year. So
yeah, him and Henley are out for the year.
And they've got one of the worst minor league teams, you know, minor league systems in the league. So to me, it's a no-brainer. I think they definitely trade him, and I think they could bring five-star minor leaguers in addition to a couple of great three- or four-star players. It's just a matter of which team out there has those prospects and the money to pay Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't a ton of teams that have enough talent ready to go. Now, believe it or not, the Dodgers are one of those teams. I don't think they should do it. I don't think it's worth it. But, you know, they have Urias in AAA ball, who is basically throwing nonstop shutouts right now, and he's 19 years old. So that would be the kind of prospect. They'd want two guys like that plus a hitter or, you know, at least three no-doubt major league talent players and then probably two or three high upside guys who nobody quite knows what they're going to get yet. But
yeah,
anyway.
I mean, it would take Urias, Seager, Jock Peterson, and their next best prospect. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what it would take. I mean, that's what it would take to get Trout, but, I mean, that would be quite a team. You know, another team I think that would be an excellent fit for them would be the Mets. The Mets have a ton of young players, deep pockets, being in New York City. You know, they've got all that young pitching talent. I could see them being a good fit, you know, sending maybe an aging Jonas Cespedes back over to the Angels. You know, who knows? There's not a lot of teams out
Cespedes isn't really worth anything because his contract is only this year, but they could send away either Mats or Syndergaard and then throw in Zach Wheeler that tore his, UCL, put him out there, Conforto. I'd say all three of them. And then you get Mike Trout. I mean, it's a plausible deal. I don't think there's any way in hell they actually trade Trout because that's really hard to justify your fan base. Fans don't want to hear next year. They want to hear this year. So, but anyway, I just thought that was an interesting possibility that I heard on the radio this morning.
How deep are the Nationals' pockets? Do they trade their stud Lucas Giolito in the minor leagues and a couple of young players there and pair up Mike Trout with Bryce Harper in the outfield? Could you guys imagine that?
I just don't think they have enough pitching talent to do that.
They have, like, the number three prospect in baseball, their pitcher, Lucas Giolito, who's, like, 6'6", 240,
really
and throws, like, 99 miles an hour. The kid's a stud.
I just think you need to get back at least two pitchers because pitchers get hurt.
No, I agree. I'm just throwing that out there kind of more for fun. Think about pairing Trout and Harper together. I mean, that would be unbelievable to watch.
Well, and, you know, you're talking about Bryce Harper. There's a couple other little things about Bryce Harper we should just talk about real quick. Number one is that in a game against the Cubs, Bryce Harper was walked 6 times in one ball game, the most total bases ever received without a single at-bat registered in the game. That's amazing. His on-base percentage, his on-base percentage, like, just, you know, went just crazy. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, it would go up like 10 points in that one game. And then not only that, Bryce Harper also got ejected for telling an umpire to F off after he was ejected, then he told the umpire to F off, got a one-game suspension. Does baseball need to temper him a little bit? I mean, Nate, you were talking about his fiery attitude. Is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Mark. He's got to tone it down a little bit. I've seen a lot in the news this week, kind of a back and forth between Harper and Yasiel Puig about making the game more fun. And, you know, the younger generation is kind of tired of the whole non-celebration and enjoying, you know, hitting a home run. You know, the older generation is so big on respect and that kind of thing. And I think, you know, Puig and Harper kind of want to change that a little bit and bring a little more fun to the game. But, you know, on top of that, you do have to have a little respect as well. I mean, you can't tell the umpire to F off, even though you disagree with the call. Just real quick, I don't know if you guys were watching the Red Sox games last week, but Big Poppy had a pretty big explosion on the umpires as well. I'm surprised he hasn't been suspended for that.
Because it was last year. They want to make sure he's around to get that.
Yeah, I suppose so. And it was some pretty bad calls on the umpires' part, so Major League Baseball is probably just doing a no call there. But as far as the walks,
you know what they say about baseball, right? It's an imperfect game run by imperfect people and called by imperfect officials. And that's kind of what makes it a special game, right? So, you know, we don't want to take all that kind of stuff out of it. And, I mean, it's that weird middle line, right? Because you don't want to, like, get rid of the fire. You don't want to get rid of the intensity and the heart and everything. But you also, you want to show that there has to be respect for authorities. And does any amount of money even do that anymore? I mean, when you're making, he might be making $50 million next year. I mean, how do you find that? Do you find him $7 million?
That's a great question.
I have a really good question considering what he said. When he got ejected, how in the world was he still on the bench and not in the clubhouse that he was able to come out and celebrate with the team? Once you get ejected in sports, you're usually taken off the field pretty fast.
Yeah, you're
I didn't notice that. Yeah, you're supposed to leave the stadium when you're ejected, as far as I know.
You probably just have to go to the locker room, but that's what I meant.
You can't be on the field or in the dugout. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how he got on the field.
He actually got fined $1 million because of that. Who knows? Or the one game suspension. Maybe that was why. Just a quick update for anyone listening who doesn't have access to a TV. Oklahoma City is ahead. 41-29, make that 42-29, with 2 minutes left in the second quarter. Spurs are in trouble, fellas.
Let me give an update, too, also, if anyone does not have a TV. The San Jose Sharks and Nashville Predators are tied up at 0-0. We're going a quick commercial break, and we'll hit the NBA real fast. We're going to get settled. Game 7, last night was was a little out of character for a Game 7 with a 6-1 final. This game looks like it's settling in to be pretty much a typical Game 7 tight situation. Two teams that don't have terribly too much experience in Game 7s, but let's rip through some baseball stuff here. We'll hit the NBA, then we'll go on in the NHL. What's up next, Mark? What do you have for us?
Where are we going next?
Let's keep going with the MLB. Let's keep rolling with the MLB. We'll take a break probably right at the hour mark.
So let's see. How about the Rockies, another hometown team, right? They pulled off a franchise first, and this is kind of frightening to think about because they never did this. They had a West Coast in-division road trip that I believe included Arizona, San Diego, and San Francisco. I don't think LA was part of it. So the Rockies on that road trip had a winning record. It was the first time in franchise history that they ever had a winning record on a West Coast in-division road trip. Throw that on top of the fact that this year they are not winning at Coors Field. Who are these Rockies, fellas? We've never seen the Rockies like this before.
That's a really good question because, how old is the club now? 21 years old? 26 years old? I mean, for them, the first time for them to do that is just ridiculous to have it to be the first time that they went in division and actually came out ahead.
I mean, we're talking about a division that has had some pretty bad years, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard for me to believe that that's true. that's futility at its finest. Thank God for the rooftop deck, guys.
unbelievable.
The Rockies are only sitting two games below .500 right now. I know we only are in the second week of May here.
Well, they were tied for first not long ago. They had that 7-game losing streak, and that, you know,
it was a seven-game losing streak at home. It wasn't a seven-game losing.
Right. I corrected myself. It was at home. But, yeah, it's hard to believe. Usually the Rockies are really good at home and then worse on the road. So I don't know what they're going to do. I think they have a great young pitching staff in the minor leagues. Everything I read, Mark, says that they've got, you know, 5, 6, 7, even 8 solid arms coming up. So I don't know.
They do, and their pitching has been really good this year. Listen, I mean, Gray has been good, and Chatwood has been good, and there's one other guy who's been pretty good. So
Miles has been pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting pitching for the first time that I can remember they've got pitching, and now they can't hit. And it's not Tulowitzki, because Tulowitzki can't hit for anything in Toronto, so they're not missing him. And Story's been much better.
Yeah.
So why can't the Rockies hit? I mean, Cargo started off hot, but he's kind of gone quiet. Arenado is playing like an MVP, and Story is having an epic rookie season so far. I mean, how are they losing these games at home?
You got to be able to pitch at home. I mean, to come into play, they pitch here. Why can't we? You know, for whatever reason, you know, it's been a short time. I mean, it's a long season. The Rockies have plenty of time to turn it around. It could just be one of those streaks right now. You know,
it is kind of odd, though, right? I mean, think about it this way. Hideo Nomo threw a no-hitter here. We just saw last night Garrett Richards took a shutout into the eighth inning, I think, or the ninth. You know, I mean, other pitchers do pitch well here. And so what is different as a pitcher in the Rockies? I mean, I've never pitched. I don't know how to pitch. So I don't know the difference of pitching at altitude. But, I mean, why can other pitchers do it?
The big difference is the off-speed stuff, Mark, and the movement on the ball. More for a ball to curve at higher altitude or to get that movement. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just the difference in talent. You know, the teams that are coming in have just that much more talent in their roster that their curveball curves another inch. Their slider goes another, you know, inch than the lack of talent with the Rockies rotation. I don't know if it's that, you know, that little of a difference, but
Or is it that you just have to spin the ball faster until they throw it harder and snap it more, but you can't do that over the course of the season because you'll destroy your arm like Mike Hampton did, right?
Because
he started
out
real good, and then he went terrible.
Yeah, no, that could definitely be it. I don't know. If I was the Rockies, I'd take those darn walls down that they put up this year, get rid of the humidor, and just go back to the old-school Blake Street Bomber style. Get a couple of ground ball pitchers in here, and that's what seemed to work for them. That's when they made the playoffs. I mean, other than their epic 26-game win streak in, 2007 when they did that and we went to the World Series game, Mark?
That's what it was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, you know, they were good back when they could really, really hit. So, to me, it's time to get rid of the humidor, get rid of those darn balls, and go back to the bomber ball.
So the San Antonio game is now at the halftime. It is 31 San Antonio, 55 Oklahoma City. I think we're about to see San Antonio lead the playoffs. Now, we've got some NBA news to talk about. Did we want to take a break before that?
Do we cover everything we wanted to cover there in baseball there, Mark? I think we did.
Well, I think we've got enough for now. We can save some stuff. We do have another show coming up on Saturday, folks. So
yeah,
we've got plenty more material to go over.
We have another show coming up Sunday morning.
Sunday,
I want to give you a quick update on the San Jose. San Jose, the captain, Joe Pavelski, scored at the 10:52 mark of the first period. San Jose is up 1-0 now on the Nashville Predators. They are 5-3 when scoring first in the playoffs this year right now. So we're settling into a Game 7, guys. We are going to settle into a quick commercial break. Mark, you came home from work tonight. I know you didn't like to see that photo of me lounging on a pool chair doing my work. What did you do to pick yourself up?
Well, I got really, really drunk. No, I think what you're referring to is that one of the things that can kind of get you going again after you've had a slow day, or maybe when you need to work out the kinks from your softball game the night before when you were crushing it. You know, sometimes you want to get some good meal replacements in there, some high-protein shakes. You can find those things at ekfit.net. You can also check them out on Facebook, or ekfit.net, I think. Check them out on Facebook. If you talk to them, they can get you a good workout plan. get you that beach body, get you ready for the summer. It's right around the corner, and make sure that you're eating healthy.
Yeah, we would also like to thank Sage Media for being one of our sponsors for websites, graphic design, social media, and much, much more. Sage Media will build and manage your company brand. In fact, they even designed our own Sports Offensive logo. Contact Kyle over at sagemediallc.com. That's sagemediallc.com. We'll be right back on the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark right after this quick commercial break.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to sell all your belongings and live in a commune.
These dungarees belong to all of us now, Tom.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need FeedThePig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at FeedThePig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We are going deep into the NHL and NBA playoffs right now, and as Mark was saying, something could happen tonight that has not happened pretty much, I don't think, ever. If the San Antonio Spurs lose tonight, it'll be the first time any team with that many wins has not made it to a conference final. So let's start off there with San Antonio and OKC. I mean, is Westbrook and Durant just going to go off here? Because I unfortunately don't have that game on. I only have one TV in, like, my apartment here, which has three in it. I only have one gone right now.
I just don't understand what is going on. They figured out something, and I'm not schooled enough in basketball tactics, but Kansas City seems to be shooting open almost every time, and both teams are making tons of turnovers, which I don't think was common for either team. But this does bring up a really big question, and that is, if the Spurs are eliminated, which right now looks real possible, does that hurt the NBA? Was the NBA counting on a Warriors-Spurs matchup?
I would say they were counting on that. I don't think it would hurt the NBA with an Oklahoma City Golden State matchup. I think either way, those are the top three teams. Technically the top three teams in basketball. I would technically put Cleveland fourth. So either way, you're going to get a good matchup. I think what Oklahoma City has found is that Westbrook, when you spread the Spurs out with what they have down low with Tim Duncan not being the Tim Duncan of old, but, you know, well, that's an oxymoron right there. He's looking at all of his almost 40 years old right now, unfortunately. Westbrook is literally, I mean, they compare him to Allen Iverson, and I do too. He is taking it right to the hole. He is not holding back. He's going right after him. He's got that killer instinct in saying, we're taking it to you. I don't care what your system is. I don't care what you're doing. And I don't know if Popovich has an answer for it. I don't know if this team is fast enough and has enough stamina to actually stay with Oklahoma City, especially in that OKC crowd. When they get going, that's one of the toughest places to play in basketball.
Well, you know, it's weird. They talk about the coach Popovich, Big Pop. You know, he's the master strategist. He's the genius coach that followed – in the footsteps, really, of Phil Jackson. He looks now like he's getting out-coached. He can't find a way to stop guys that he held to, like, 10 points each in the first game. I mean, Nate, there's got to be a hidden something that's really making this thing turn around.
I agree. They've definitely figured something out because it's domination almost at this point. If you guys have been watching any of the game, I've been trying to watch it as we're talking, but yeah, Popovich is definitely being outcoached, but I think it's a talent perspective as well. I mean, Westbrook, I think Allen Iverson's a great comparison, but I think he kind of reminds me of Gary Payton for some reason.
That's a good comparison.
Just really, really good, just quick to the basket, opens up a lot. I mean, opens up a lot for the team. Durant is such a great shooter. You know, I mean, he can just drive to the basket, dish to Durant. Durant's going to hit 50% of his shots. But it's hard to believe that a team with only two players on it can do what it's doing to San Antonio. I do see that LaMarcus Aldridge has really kind of dropped off the last three games.
Problem.
So I'm wondering if he's possibly injured a little bit and they're not saying anything. I don't know what it could be, guys, but one thing that we haven't brought up at all is the Portland Trail Blazers. That series is tied at 2-2, isn't it? Or is Golden State up
the
game?
No, Golden State finished them off last night.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay.
Steph went
off, right.
I think, for 29.
Oh, okay. I thought they were tied 2-2 just recently. Okay.
No, Golden State rolled them.
Okay.
Yeah, once Steph dropped 40 on them, it was over. The next game, when Steph dropped 40 on it, was a 3-1 series, and then they went out and then beat him at the Oracle. It was last night, I believe. 129, I think 121 was the final score off the top of my head, is what it was.
Yeah, I've been working too much, darn it. Sorry, I'm a little behind the times on that. But
If Kansas City can somehow hang on to the lead they've got right now, the other two games that they beat, or two of the other three games they beat, I'm sorry, Oklahoma on San Antonio, the last two wins, or two of the three wins, were only by 2 to 4 points or 4 to 5 points. So, I mean, a slight tip in the scale, a couple of turnovers here or there, you could have a completely different outcome in that series. You can't say the same thing about Golden State series because even without Steph Curry, they dominated most of that. So,
except for one game.
You got to think the Warriors are now back into that favorite status to go and represent the West in the finals. You mentioned Stephen Curry scoring those 40 points as he came off the bench. He also now has won his second NBA MVP, second straight season. He is the first ever to be unanimous. I didn't know there was no other unanimous players. I mean, Jordan was never unanimous. Duncan was not unanimous. I mean, really? Nobody?
Was Jordan and Shaq, I think it was Jordan and Shaq, were both one vote shy of being unanimous.
And I think LeBron was a vote shy a couple years back, too.
Yeah, I think he might have been the third one. I think there's been three players. I think it was Jordan, Shaq, and LeBron that have been one vote shy.
That's amazing. That's just amazing. And Jordan never got it? Wow. I mean, is that just because you had a writer in New York that couldn't stand him?
Well, you got to remember, like, Jordan was hated by everyone outside of Chicago, practically. Shaquille wasn't a very big favorite of the fans, too, and LeBron isn't either. So,
I think it brings up an interesting conversation, guys, and we've heard it before. MVP, what does it mean? Most valuable player. What is it, JP? What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because they asked LeBron James the same question this morning or last night, and he kind of watered down. He gave Steph a nice compliment and then kind of smacked backhanded him in the face at the end of his of the compliment that he gave him, going, you know, is the most valuable player of the league, the most valuable player of his team. The MVP to me is who brings the most in and out every night of the season that you could say above and beyond played the best all year long. And to me, that is Steph Curry, because The man went out and set a 3-point record at 268 last year, and goes ahead and goes out, and what does he do for an encore? He breaks it at 402 3-pointers this year.
Yeah, and that's a great point, JP. Mark, I got a question for you then. So if you look at LeBron over the last couple of years, I mean, before he went to Miami, you took him off that Cleveland team, and they were terrible. I mean, they were a lottery team. You know, if you took him off the team now, they would be, you know, they'd probably barely be a playoff team. So to me, you watch Curry, he didn't play for 2 weeks. Golden State did just fine. You know, I mean, sure, they lost a game or two here and there, but I feel like LeBron is more valuable to his team than Steph is. I'm not saying that Steph wasn't a better player overall, because I think he was a better player, but I think LeBron is more valuable to his team. Mark, what do you think about that?
I know that I think the award technically, even in like all sports, I think most valuable player is considered to be to your team, right? Because that's what makes you the most valuable, is how much you change your team. Maybe how much of a war you have in baseball is one way you can measure it, right? Wins above replacement compared to you, and to put anybody else in your spot, how many games difference do you have in your record? And
sure,
it's a much bigger deal in football, right? One means a lot in football, three means a lot in baseball, probably two means a lot in hockey and basketball. Now, I think the MVP should go to the best player of the league, only because I think that you need to recognize the best player, because that's what the Cy Young does. The Cy Young recognizes the best player in the league, not the best pitcher for his team. And so I think MVP should be the same thing in most respects. It should be the best player who deserves to get honored for having the best season of anybody in the league. Now, I mean, I understand the reason for doing it as the most valuable to their team, because that does make a huge, huge difference. But I feel like it also minimizes some amazing accomplishments, such as McGuire hit 70 home runs, doesn't win the MVP because Sammy Sosa, who's 66, was more valuable to his team that actually made the playoffs. But McGuire had the more epic season. McGuire had the more amazing year, and I think he kind of got cheated. And I think that's kind of how it is. In basketball, it's a little bit it's harder to say, right? Because, I mean, Curry is the best player in the league. I don't think you can argue that at all. As long as he is healthy, no one comes close to doing what he can do. He can shoot from anywhere and nail it. But is he more valuable to his team than LeBron? Well, I don't think anybody's more valuable to their team than LeBron, because I think LeBron's been to 5 or 6 straight NBA finals in a conference that's weaker overall. Just having him means you go to the finals for at least 6 years. That's amazing. I mean, I don't think people give that enough respect. That's amazing. But
so that brings up another question for me is, okay, there wasn't one writer out there that thought to themselves, okay, LeBron is so much more valuable to his team. How do you not even think about that? And how did one writer not put that to the vote?
No, because you can really argue for Curry pretty justifiably. You can start with the most 3-pointers ever made. You can then go to breaking his own record.
I'm not looking at the best.
I'm saying is he has it. To me, he has it on both angles. He has it as the best player for doing those things, for just having an amazing overall season in terms of scoring. Now his team broke the record for the most wins ever in a season. You know, you kind of have to acknowledge that as well. So now he's got the best overall player by breaking records. He's got the best team breaking records. And while you can say, look, his team actually does okay even when he's not there, I'm not sure that would be the case over the long haul. I think that he gives them a swagger. He gives them an invincibility feeling, and he also never looks worried or stressed at all. Even when they're losing, he looks like he's loose as a goose. There is something to be said about leadership in that role that I think helps keep that engine going in the straw that stirs the drink kind of thing. So I think you can really justify Curry because personal league record, team breaking the record, team rolling on its way to the finals at this point, looking like, how do you not give it to him?
Guys, I want to give you a quick update here, real quick, guys. San Jose just went up another goal. Joel Ward has his second goal of the playoffs at the 2:45 mark of the first period. This is now 2-0 San Jose in Game 7.
Ooh.
Just real quick there. Let's get back to the NBA conversation. I love it. That was my pick. I go four for four if they win this game in my picks.
Nice. I go with San Jose just because I'm from California, so yeah. I have no problem watching the hometown team do a little something.
Very late arriving crowd too because it was a 6 o'clock start. But let's get back to this because Nate, I think we're crossing a line between a team award and a league award is what you're talking about. Now LeBron James is definitely the MVP.
Best
of this
player versus. I think it's best player versus most valuable to their team.
Yeah, why don't the leagues do this? Why don't the leagues make two awards? They don't ever do that. Why not have a most valuable player of the league and most valuable team player? Have two awards.
I agree. I think that would really define, both awards and both roles. I think that's a great idea.
But then you have all people get pissed off that there's too many trophies and too many wins.
The traditionalists would hate that.
Now look at hockey though. They have their they've had their traditional trophies for best player at certain and this, that, the other thing for 8 years practically. And college football is the same way. You have all the Hobie Baker or that's college hockey. But you have all different awards.
College football, they have all the position awards.
Yeah, they have all the position awards. They have team awards. The NHL has player awards. They have team awards. They have traditional cup awards. That just they're mind-boggling of the Lady Bang and all that other stuff. But I think the NBA needs to loosen up a little bit and give out some more recognition and some more hardware or something.
Does it right. Hockey has gotten that part right. They have Conn Smythe or the. So the President's Trophy for the most wins, and they've got like 50 trophies, and I think that's good because then you're actually you can go look at who was the best so and so, and that's how you can find it for years. Because in baseball, you can look at the Cy Young going back, you can look at the MVP the last 15 years or so, you can look at the Silver Slugger maybe or the Fireman, but other than that, how do you know who was a great player in baseball other than the MVP?
Yeah. That's a really good point.
We should bring up that the Spurs, who are about to be eliminated because they are now down 59-36, I think it was the GM. His name is R.C. Buford for the Spurs. He was named the Executive of the Year. How much is the Executive of the Year trophy going to sting if every time you look at it, you realize you were knocked out by an inferior team in the playoffs?
Nate, let me field this one. I don't know at this point of the year, with how old the Spurs are across the board, and I hate saying this about it, I think Father Time caught up with more than Tim Duncan. I think it just caught up with all of them. They are going against a very young, very fast-paced, oriented team that will just take it right to the hole on you. You get Serge Ibaka in there, and you get Kevin Durant and Westbrook. I mean, those three men are madmen sometimes when they're playing. And I think no matter how much coaching you do, when you don't have the team there, granted they won all the games, and they're going to get lost in the shuffle, or they're going to get pointed out more than ever about how much they won in the regular season, and all of a sudden they hit a brick wall against OKC, and the problem is they blew them out in game one. So what happened in this series? Did they just literally decide it was over after game one?
It was freaking over. It's almost like Kansas City pulled a rope-a-dope. You know?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
This is how you can win, and then turned around on them. I don't know.
Just real quick back to Mark's question about Executive of the Year. I think that's more of a regular season award because it's about the moves that were made, you know?
Right.
So
right.
And LaMarcus Aldridge and, you know, whatever else they did, I think is something that they look at more so than once it's playoff time, that's on the players. I mean, you can sure look at it from the coach's perspective a little bit as well, with Coach Pop being out-coached right now. But, I mean, it's pretty much on the players. The executive thing is a regular season award, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it was probably justified because, I mean, everybody kind of forgot about the Spurs and ignored them for what Golden State was doing. But, you know, they lost one game at home, and they finished only like five games back of the best finishing team in history. So any other year, the Spurs are the number one seed by quite a bit, you know, and boy, they sure wish they were the number seed right now playing against Portland instead of playing against Kansas City.
Right.
Well,
and, you know, I agree with you, Nate. The Executive of the Year is definitely a regular season trophy. It has nothing to do with the playoffs. It has to do with all the moves you're making, your front office, everything that encompasses your day in the sporting community. When you walk into the office, start your time, the time you finish your day, the moves you make, it comes down to everything. The Spurs have an organization that if you're going to model a sports franchise after, you would look at their business model and copy it. That's really what that award is for. I mean,
they kind of defined it early, right? They found their big three early on. They got Duncan, and then Robinson for like 1 year, but then they had Duncan and Ginobili and Parker. And now they've got Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, but they don't have that third maybe because the third has gotten tired, like JP said, hitting the wall. So maybe that's what happened to him.
I think Aldridge tonight had to score over 20 points for them to be in this game. And I'm if I pull up the stat sheet right now, I'm going to guarantee he's not even close to it.
No, I think that they've shut him down the whole series really now since the first game.
Yeah.
I've just been watching – you know, half of this game since we've been on the radio, and I can tell you right now what it is. It's the pace of play. I mean, Oklahoma City is running up and down the court like crazy, and if they don't go right to the basket, it's a kick out to somebody for a quick, easy two, and they're just doing it over and over and over. And San Antonio
can't match. They're younger, they're stronger.
They can't match the pace.
What channel is the OKC game on?
That's on ESPN.
Yeah, it's on ESPN 206.
By the way, if anybody out there listening wants to interject their opinion, we do still take calls on this show. We sometimes don't see them if they come in, but we will try and bring you on if you want to add your input. What's the number there, JP?
The number is 929-477-3204. That's 929-477-3204. Yep, anybody?
Just in case anybody wanted to throw in another opinion there in terms of the malarkey that we're spreading around. Now, you know, I know that JP loves the Cavaliers, his favorite team, and they are 8-0.
You got a love, you got a fraud, you've got everything on it.
You got some green ivy growing on the wall there, and but the Cavaliers are 8-0. Now I know it's the Eastern Conference. I know that's not as big a deal, but still they're 8-0. The last team I remember going 8-0 to start the playoffs was the Lakers. I mean, could Cleveland? Are we all sleeping on Cleveland? Is Cleveland going to walk into the finals and put a smackdown on someone?
Hey, I've been telling you guys for a couple weeks now, this is Cleveland's year. And you guys can laugh at me, but I have a feeling that this is it. I mean, the West has three teams probably that are better, but they are just beating each other to a pulp. By the time somebody comes out of that, they're just going to be injured and beat up, and Cleveland's going to be cruising, and they're playing – great right now. Their chemistry is the best it's been all year long. Kevin Love and LeBron and Kyrie, they're scoring, all three of them are scoring 25 a game. You know, they're looking real smooth. I think Cleveland, this is their year.
Well, believe me, Nate, if we want to laugh about you, we can find a whole bunch more things than your terrible sports prediction. So, hey, but no, they do look amazing, don't they? That they look like they are in the zone. It looks like they've all finally bought into the same system. Because, you know, the last couple of years when you watched the Cavaliers, or even the year before that, the Heat with LeBron, it really seemed like it was an all-ISO team, wasn't it? All isolation plays. They don't look like that now. They look like they're moving the ball around, but they're taking lots of different types of shots. They're getting lots of plays made out. I think you're right. I think they've got the chemistry right on a roll. And I wouldn't be that shocked, to be honest with you, if we saw a Cleveland-Kansas City final, because it's not what anyone's expecting.
Oklahoma City, buddy.
You got that locked in your brain there, Kansas City. I don't know why.
Kansas City, Oklahoma City, the same thing. They're both little cities in the middle no one cares about. Come on. I mean, you know, they're all little joke cities. Does Kansas City have a team?
I think you offended a whole section of the country there.
Yeah.
That's my job. Who cares,
I said,
man? There's only the states on the hands. Nothing else really matters.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean, there's
a state in the Midwest anybody cares about.
In Oklahoma City, except go to a Thunder's game tonight. I mean, trust me, unless you're getting boozed up. I mean, come on.
Guys, I've been a LeBron supporter since day one. I was irritated by the decision.
Not for him.
I don't know. I just got a thing for greatness. I like watching LeBron play.
I love LeBron. He's amazing.
I was irritated by the decision, and I was irritated earlier this year when he did a press conference and basically said, "Hey, I can flip the switch whenever I want." That really pissed me off, and I was like, "No way!" You know,
I was like, there's no way
that you can just flip the switch. There's 10 other guys on your team. I don't care if you flip the switch. Are they going to flip the switch too? But they have.
Nah, it's basketball, dude. He can play like 5-6 of the minutes of a game. And I mean, like LeBron James, still in Cleveland, rides his bike home from the stadium after playing a game. He then bikes home however many miles on his bicycle. And I mean, LeBron is a physical freak, dude. He has got almost the most perfect body that's ever existed in humanity in terms of his endurance, his strength, his size, and his speed. If he played football, LeBron James would be breaking every receiving record or rushing record out there unless he got hurt. And I don't think he would. I think he would hurt.
You think he'd be as good as Gronk?
I don't know about that, but I'm going to interject a point here real quick, guys. Now, Nate, you said you were a LeBron supporter and then you had an irritation. You know what takes care of that? A little talcum powder.
you know we used to keep the box of cornstarch in the bathroom at work.
Well, I know that. I remember that clearly.
Boy, I don't know if anybody is watching the San Antonio game. But the Kansas City. I'm just kidding. Oklahoma City. They are just.
Aldridge looks horrible.
Steals off of nothing. Steals off of inbound passes. Steals off of rebound passes. I mean, they're just. Boy, I mean, the Spurs. They're still scoring okay, but man, they are giving up. And wow, they're just horrible.
They're scoring okay.
They're desperate.
They have 47 points and almost. Only 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They're not scoring.
Yeah.
They are terrible.
When they score fast. But it's not that they're not scoring when they have the ball. It's that they turn the ball over so many times.
That's the pace of the game. And Oklahoma City is dictating that pace. So, they're going to look like they're scoring fast. But that's all Oklahoma City. I mean, anybody can watch this game for a five-minute period and see the pace is the total difference in the game.
Oh, I turned the game on when the hockey game went to the first intermission, and I can tell right away. The pace of the play.
Yeah, I think Duncan's
night and day.
I think
Duncan's
done.
Coming in right now.
They're going to have to dump Ginobili. They're going to have to probably even consider getting ready Parker. because they've got to add some youth and some speed to that team. I mean, obviously they were a great team because they dominated all year, but it's just playoff basketball is so different from regular season basketball. It's just it's a different monster all the way around.
Guys, let's
take a shot. My Tony Parker.
We're right at the we're ready to go with the last half hour. We're going to go the last half hour with no commercials. We're going to take one more quick commercial break here. You're listening to the Sports Offensive on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
We are back on Sports Offensive with JPM Larks. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. We are deep into NBA and NHL playoff action. We are kind of poking a little fun here at the Cleveland Cavaliers and their 8-0 record against some wish-wash teams that I think some college teams could have probably beat here in the NBA. But let's get back to the conversation, guys. We're in the middle of a timeout here in the OKC game.
Well, you know, I was going to say we can probably save the rest of this stuff for our Sunday show. But before we go into hockey, we do need to talk about something that's kind of odd, right, in the NFL, which is Sam Bradford's agent trying to play down the whole sitting out, whining, crying, demanding a trade thing. And Bradford's now going to be showing up apparently this next week at Eagles practice. Now,
he's already there. He showed up Tuesday.
Oh, he did show up.
Oh, he showed
so
up
how
Tuesday.
Does that work?
Oh, yeah. He basically, he requested a trade. No, he said the Broncos is where he wanted to land it, and I would have laughed my ass off if that would have happened. No one was going to ever pick up his contract. He's gotten paid $70 million and has never played in a playoff game. You know,
has he ever had a winning record?
I don't think he's ever even had a winning record. I think it's been 500. I mean, Fitzpatrick's the other one that's right behind him with the most money without getting a playoff game, but he's like $50 million behind him. Sam Bradford decided to whine a little bit.
Fitzpatrick looks good in the regular season once in a while.
Yeah. Sam Bradford decided that he didn't like his – he signed a very lucrative two-year – so he's $22 million guaranteed this year. A two-year contract. It was a short-term contract. He knew it was a short-term contract. The Eagles told him it was a short-term contract. When they drafted Carson Wentz and they made it very apparent, he got his little panties in a bunch, and he decided to whine and be a coward about it instead of stepping up and saying, you know what, I'm going to lead this team this year. I'm going to go show you why you should have drafted somebody else instead of Carson Wentz. He got his panties in a bunch and decided to play the little girl whiny cry game, you know. You can't see my fingers going right now, but it's the world's smallest violin playing for you there, Bradford. When you walk onto the field and into that stadium, like Mike Golick said, they are going to be all over you, and the first time you turn the ball over, they're going to have your head on a skillet and fried up.
And it's not going to take long for him to have that first turnover. It's probably not even going to be that hard for them to replace him, because the Eagles aren't winning anything this year anyway. So why not put Wentz in there and get him the repetition, you know?
Well, a lot of the traditional say you never want to just throw a rookie quarterback in, especially when you have a guy like Sam Bradford there and Chase Daniels. You know, let him learn a little bit. At some point this season, I know the Eagles fans are going to want to see Carson Wentz, and you're going to see him probably – I'm going to make a speculation here. By the at least the 13th, 12th or 13th game of the season, you're going to see Carson Wentz in there. Because I only see – when looking over, the Eagles have one of the hardest schedules there is out there. I don't know if you guys have looked at it. I foresee a total of 5 wins, capable of 5 wins on that schedule, maybe 6 if they're lucky. That's
well,
it.
Mark, you know what happens when you bring a player up from the minor leagues too quickly. I mean, they could just be destroyed for the rest of their career. So I think it's smart for them to go with the veteran at least for half a season, you know, and let Carson sit the bench, let Bradford earn his $22 million, and just move forward, get through the next couple of years, because they've got a lot of pieces to add.
Well, just to be a devil's advocate, nothing more, I mean, maybe, you know, you look at Peyton Manning, you look at Andrew Luck, you look at some of these quarterbacks, and if you truly think you've got that gem, if you truly have that franchise game-changing quarterback, why not let him take those lumps that first year, get them out of their system, and then come on and be on fire the next few years, as opposed to, like, say, let him sit for 2 years. He learns more of the play calls. He learns the audibles. He learns a lot of film study. But then he still has 2 years to get himself up to his full potential. Now you're looking at 4 years from now before your quarterback really pays off, and then you're still hoping that he pays off, as opposed to maybe now you can get him going right early.
Do you want Ryan Leaf or do you want Aaron Rodgers?
I don't think that's the equation. That's not fair. Ryan Leaf is Johnny Manziel. That's a little different.
I was going to say, do we have to have an intervention here? Does Ryan Leaf need to call into the show and help someone out? Or do we have to get him on Twitter?
What do you think is going to happen to Ryan Fitzpatrick since you brought him up? I mean, he's not budging on his salary. He wants, I think it's $14 million, right? Or $15
million? 15.
Who's that?
Well, I know he wanted $17 to begin with, which he probably deserves, but nobody's going to pay him that.
You know, my buddy Scott, you said a great saying about Ryan Fitzpatrick. You said Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback that keeps both teams in the game.
That is pretty good.
Perfect example of it, I guess.
Yeah. Guys, I think he ends up back with the Jets at some point. I mean, nobody else wants him.
They really
don't.
The only
other thing is Jets in the Sun.
The only other thing that I could see, and this is just out of left field, is if the 49ers do either get rid of Kaepernick, cut him, or trade him, I could see them maybe bringing him in at a cheaper rate. But, I mean, that's maybe getting closer to the season and he's got no other team to sign with.
What are they going to send him to NFL Germany? I mean,
yeah, it's interesting to me because Fitzpatrick probably is one of the 20 best quarterbacks in the league. I mean,
it's a quarterback deprived league.
It is. And it's interesting to me because he is probably a top 20, 24 quarterback, but the teams that are below that 15, 16 ranking are trying to go with a younger guy. So he's kind of caught in that.
He's caught and he wants too much money.
Yeah, he's caught in the middle, and
he's crazy. He should have called the Broncos and said, "I'll do it for $10 million a season for 2 years," and then he would have himself the perfect team around him to win a Super Bowl and make him look real good and make some good money and go off and retire.
Yeah,
I think he's crazy.
It makes you wonder how much influence his agent has, and I don't know how old. I don't know how old Fitzpatrick is, but, I mean, the guy, he's earned his stripes.
Right.
You know, I mean, he probably does deserve to get paid. I mean, watching what he did in New York last year with not much of a team around him was fairly impressive.
Oh, he has two really good receivers and a really good running game and a pretty decent offensive line. I wouldn't call that nothing.
Yeah, but his defense is terrible. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, but that has no effect on his numbers.
He had some weapons, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. But I think, if Bradford's worth 22, how is he not worth 15 to 17? But, now that they've got the young
Bradford's not worth 22.
Bradford isn't worth 22. That was a Chip Kelly move. Chip Kelly, it's like eating Pringles. I mean, money's like Pringles. It doesn't really have an actual value. Watch him go buy a corn dog. You know, he could pay probably $100 million for the corn dog and about $1 for the fries. So you never know.
Ryan Fitzpatrick is 33 years old.
33. Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say I thought 35 was a little old.
And don't forget, he's a Harvard graduate. So.
Well, I'll tell
you,
it's Cutler, it's Tannehill, it's all these really not good quarterbacks getting paid a lot of money. And that's why these guys think they deserve this kind of money.
Yeah.
That's the same.
Yeah, I tell you what, out of all those, I would take Tannehill.
Just a quick update for you. End of the third quarter, Oklahoma City 91, San Antonio 65. It's all been over, gentlemen.
That's ugly.
I've been
all
watching this hockey games for intermission. It's ugly.
This is just embarrassing.
Hey, Mark, what's the futures on the Thunder right now? They got to be like 7-1. That'd probably be a good $100 bet right there.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I cashed out all my money when I got up to 1,000, so I got the hell out of Bovada. I'll have to look them up real quick.
I think they were 5-1 or 4-1.
Okay.
I think that's what it was.
So I was going to just a last little bit on football. Just overall best off season, I think it comes down to Jaguars or Raiders in football, but I was kind of curious what you guys thought.
Jaguars.
JP, go ahead. Jaguars.
Jaguars all the way. They had a plan in the draft. They executed it perfectly. The problem is they play in Jacksonville.
Of that depends on their young quarterback. If Bortles continues to progress, that offense looks as good as any offense out there.
Oh, yeah. Those receivers
are
good.
And the young running back they have is great, and they brought in Chris Ivory, and they have Julius Thomas. I mean, a couple of great pieces in the draft to add to their defense. I'm pretty excited about what they did.
Guys, knowing the counterparts on the phone lines here that I'm upholding my night with here on the radio. Thanks everyone for listening, by the way. What do you think about the Raiders going to our fabulous city that we all love, Las Vegas?
I got two words for you guys. Road trip.
Oh my goodness, yes. Now, would that not make Vegas? I mean, imagine winter in Vegas now. You go there. I mean, can you imagine the size of the stadium they would have to build? Everyone would want to go see the Raiders.
It's
Vegas, you have the Raiders game on Saturday night, dude. Saturday night. Woo!
It's going to be about 65,000 people is what they're saying. I didn't realize Vegas had a 2.1 million population of people that actually live there year-round.
Oh,
I didn't realize
that. One of the fastest-growing cities in the world.
One of the fastest-growing cities, yeah.
Denver is only that big. Denver is only a town of a little over 1.5, 1.6 million when you look at all those suburbs around there.
And it only has 1.2 million houses, and that's why everything is so freaking expensive right now.
You don't have to tell me that, but I like what you said, road trip. I would have a second favorite, a third favorite football team.
Yeah.
Would go Eagles, Broncos,
great.
Vegas.
Yeah, I'd have to like the Raiders if they were in Vegas. I gotta admit it.
I would say there'd be multiple road trips if that would happen. But I think it's a great move. I know Roger Goodell doesn't like it, but I think it's a great move. Why not? I mean, how many places don't deserve an NFL team like Jacksonville? Jacksonville doesn't deserve an NFL team.
The reason Goodell doesn't want it is because he knows what's going to happen. The same thing that the NBA knows what's going to happen when they move either the Nets or whoever else that they're going to move to Las Vegas, and that is sports gambling will be legal in Vegas, so it will
gambling,
be legal in the franchise, and that's what they don't want.
Gambling,
and they know it's gonna,
gambling's not going away, guys. It's just not.
It's not going anywhere.
I like Adam Silver's approach. Let's embrace it. And, you know, just roll with it.
Well, it's so weird. It's like making weed legal. It's like, wait a minute. Just say that 1% of all bets go to the government as a fee, right? Or as a tax or whatever. 1%. 1%. Just one. Not even a half. A half percent of all bets in Vegas go into into Social Security. Social Security will be solvent for the next 6,000 years. Overnight.
Oh, how about
because,
it? Well, now,
I mean,
now, you know, an interesting point is the NHL already has plans to expand for an expansion team in Vegas right now. So we're going to see it happen in either football or in hockey. There's going to be a professional sports team in Vegas.
You know they want to do a football team in London or in Europe somewhere. I don't understand that. Isn't it a five-hour trip from London to anywhere in the U.S.? I mean,
yeah,
are you going to fly
five hours
to New York and 5 hours to Seattle?
Yeah, it's something that isn't going to – you're not going to see it happen. They want to do it. They want to do it just for the expansion purpose. You'll see a team in Mexico before you see a team in London.
I agree.
Right. I mean, they have to find out a way to either have an underwater or airplane that can go so fast that it can make the trip from coast to coast in 2 hours. If you can't get it down
Mark,
in 2 hours, it's not worth it.
Hyperloop. It's the Hyperloop. Look it up.
Well, see, there you go. So, I mean, if we can do that, then rock on. You know, I mean, then it'll be fun. I'm still waiting for teleporters. I want to be able to go visit whoever I want to go visit without having to drive. Imagine that. No more drunk driving. No more car traffic. No more pollution. I mean, you can go home and see family one night. You can go see an event in any other city the next night. You know, You can go to Vegas and not worry about getting a hotel because you could just go home every night.
Oh,
Marcus,
that would
be the best part.
Marcus, online today, you were saying about you should start a business. Well, why don't you put some backing into a teleporter idea here?
Dude, I like that idea. I think that's a moneymaker, man. Who wouldn't want to be able to transport? Imagine how great this would be. You go to Spain. And you go look at a Picasso museum, and you hop in your transport, and you go to Japan, and you get some authentic radiation-filled sushi, and then you get into the teleporter, and you go to Vegas.
I thought you were
going to
go somewhere else.
You go to a strip club while making bets. I mean, and then when you're tired, it's been a 16-hour day. You're just exhausted. You just hop into the teleporter, go home, and crash in your own bed. That would be amazing. I mean, I'm sure it would cost a lot to teleport, but it would so be worth it. I'd do it every day.
Boy, this we have gone.
And
from
we digress.
On Earth. Let's hit up some hockey, guys. We've had some outstanding Stanley Cup action here. I think I'm probably the biggest hockey enthusiast of the three of us. We have no number one seeds left in hockey. I mean, by far. I mean, this has been a quite interesting round of hockey. This is really interesting. The Washington Capitals, since getting Alexander Ovechkin, they got put out by the Pittsburgh Penguins the other night in Game 6, which was another one of my picks. Thank you. The Caps, since getting Ovechkin in 07-08, have made 8 playoff appearances with 5 playoff wins, but have never advanced out of the second round of the playoffs and won the President's Trophy twice. What's wrong in Washington? They have great goaltending. They have Ovechkin. They've got Oshie. They've got some really good players. They can't do anything with them now. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I think it's the standard old gets-in-your-head type thing. It happened to the Chicago Cubs when they were playing against the Marlins a few years ago. It happens all the time. You don't think you can win. You've got this big target on your back. And so even when you're close, even when you're better, even when you should win easily, you're fighting yourself more than you're fighting the other team. And the other team can say, oh, we believe we're going to win because they can't win. So they just can't do it. So I don't mean, and from what I remember, I mean, Crosby wasn't great in that series either, was he?
No. In fact, I was just going to get into that. The Phil Kessel leads the team in points and goals with 13 points and 5 goals. Nick Bonino, who scored the game-winning goal, leads the Caps with 8 assists. And Malkin, Crosby, they have been non-existent. And this is the best story of the playoffs that I think. Goalie Matt Murray is he has played in 13 regular season games, was 9-2-1. With an overtime loss and a 2.0 goals against average. He played 13 games in the regular season. He is their playoff goaltender. He's 7-2 with a 2.05 goals against average in the playoffs. Tell me that's not
so what happened to their player.
I don't know their starter.
So,
I don't know I don't know that much about hockey, but Matt Murray is like this year's John Sebastian Jaguar. The guy is on fire. If he keeps it up, Pittsburgh's going to take the whole thing, because you know Malkin and Crosby are going to come around. They're going to come around at some point. That team is going to be dangerous if they can keep the goaltending going like that.
A quick update on the score: the Sharks are now 3-0 up. Last goal looks like Couture scored the last goal. So that this game is looking a lot. Well, I can't say that because the Predators came back from a deficit like this to go to the 3 overtime game. So you can't say it's over yet in that one. They're only halfway through, not even halfway through the second.
The Spurs are barreling back, in Kansas City. I mean Oklahoma City. They're only down by 23, so they're making a comeback.
And Tim Duncan just hit a foul shot.
Yeah, just one. The other one was brutally ugly.
Let me bring this back around it quick because this has a little something to do with Colorado too. The Blues blow out Dallas 6-1 in a game 7 last night. Lehtinen in goal is not a playoff goaltender. That's their biggest flaw. Bowery Melrose said it. Every sports analyst says it. I say it. He reminds me of Varlamov with the Avs. The Avs aren't going to ever do anything in the playoffs unless they get rid of that guy. And the Dallas Stars are in the same position. I mean, what? This is another
Barry
thing.
Barry Manilow?
What's that? Barry Melrose. Best dressed
Best
dressed man on ESPN. Lehtinen is just, he's atrocious, and Laramie is atrocious also. I mean, can we really look at the Avalanche and say they're going to make a playoff run unless they make a move at goaltending in the offseason? Or are they going
to
throw another
season? They have to. No, it's like everything. You have to have the goalie. I remember back when the Avalanche first came to Colorado, and they won their titles, and it was them and the Red Wings and the Devils were like all the big teams. And it was always Waugh and Brodeur who ended up taking their teams to the finals. So it seems like it's the same thing in every
Stanley Cup run.
Yeah. So I mean, they have to get a Stanley Cup goalie.
If you look on paper, the Dallas Stars were a way better team than the St. Louis Blues, but their goaltending was nowhere near what the Blues were getting in goaltending, and they even pulled their goaltender in Game 6 and started him in Game 7, and he came up.
I mean, it's like the shutdown pitcher in baseball in the World Series, right, or in the playoffs. It doesn't matter how good your offense is. If the pitcher can shut your bats down, nothing else matters. Same thing in hockey. You can have the hottest sticks in the world. If you can't get the puck in the net, nothing else matters.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Tampa Bay, Ben Bishop, I mean, his goaltending, he's got a 1.89 goals against average for the Lightning. He is going to be tough to score. If Malkin and Crosby don't get in, and Letang don't get on their horse, this guy's going to shut them down. I mean, you guys got to remember, Tampa did lose to Chicago last year in the Stanley Cup Finals. So Tampa is a team that's been down the road. Not to say that the Pittsburgh Penguins haven't. This is the toughest series to pick right now. If I had to look at it, I can tell you right now in the Western Conference, before this game's even over, I'm taking St. Louis over the winner of this game that's on right now. I'm going to take the Blues right away, right over. doesn't make a difference to me. But picking between Pittsburgh and Tampa, that game's going to start tomorrow night. I'm going to have to make a prediction here tomorrow at some point. I'm not sure where to go. I mean, I almost want to say that Tampa, with the way that Crosby and Malkin is playing, Tampa might actually take down the Penguins. They very well could have a very good chance of doing it.
It's going to be a battle of goaltending. It's definitely going to come down to the goaltending.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to keep – can Murray keep playing like he's been playing? I mean, Bishop has been pretty incredible all year.
And the other thing is if you look at Tampa's names, I mean, Tyler Johnson's leading the team in points. He's got 13 points, 4 goals, 9 assists. Nikita Kucherov leads the team in goals with 9. I mean, they don't have all those big names down in Tampa that are doing this. They have a very good backbone support system that they just play good hockey, and they get good goals.
Well, it's a lot like it's chemistry, JP. You know, it's good chemistry.
It definitely is.
I tell you what,
chemistry.
Though, a problem for the NHL, and here you go right here, is that the seventh game of a very important series is on NBC Sports Network. I don't even know if 50% of people have that channel in their home. I got all sports channels because I have to. I can't stand not to. But
that's a problem.
The only thing that there's two things they need to do. They need to give themselves better TV coverage, and they need to get rid of the stupid blue lines and get rid of offside, because that would make hockey 1,000 times more exciting.
Well, Mark, you and I have talked about it before. We've talked about it before. Hockey has its hardcore fans. They're never going to lose those. They need to start appealing to the casual fan. And I think those are some great moves to start with. You know, getting rid of the offside, getting rid of the blue line. A lot of it is a fast-paced game. It's exciting. I'm kind of one of the rare people. I am a casual fan, and I enjoy watching the playoffs. I don't watch the regular season at all, and it's more exciting for me if the Avalanche are involved, which they haven't been.
Yeah.
You know,
lately, it's a long time.
Playoff,
in 2 years.
Playoff hockey is as exciting as any sport out there. I mean,
it really is
a blast to watch.
They have to figure out a way. They got to make a way so you can see the puck. That's the problem. When I go watch an Avalanche game live, I love it. I am hooked from the opening horn to the closing horn because it's an exciting sport, and it's got lots of great noise and yelling and screaming and ice girls skating across and all that stuff. It's wonderful. But if you're on TV, you can't see it.
Yeah. They tried the floating puck for a while there. Remember,
they
didn't
even
start
that.
Now, see, that's not a good idea. What they could do is they could put a strobe light on both sides of the puck or a colored light or something that flashes, and not like a bright flash, just like a flickering color. And then you could, you know, and even make it a flickering that's picked up only on the TV camera and not in real life or something. You know, something.
Well, they could
try that
out. They could try that out in Colorado, and then if anybody had seizures from the strobe lights, they want you to know. They'd be okay.
I don't know. You can't do it in Colorado because everybody's going to be high on edibles and they're not going to know if it's a puck or if they're just, you know, hammered. So, you know.
Guys, we're running out of time here. hockey is not hard to watch on TV. You just have to know the ebb and flow of the game. I don't have any problem following the puck. You're just not used to watching hockey on TV. In fact, I hate it with that puck on.
That's true.
I do think if they would change the vantage point for the camera to being – about 15 rows behind the goalie and up a little bit, that would be
well, you
want
to play PlayStation. You want the PlayStation camera. You want the PlayStation camera.
Yes.
All right, guys,
absolutely.
We've got 60 seconds to go here, guys. Let's let everyone know we have a show coming up at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Sunday morning. It's a 2-hour show. We're going to be action-packed, full-jammed of sports. We're going to go all over the map on that one. We do, like I said, that show on Saturday morning. Fans, please go to our Facebook page. It's the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. Go to our Twitter page, at the SBT Offensive. Like both pages. Be a fan of both pages. Spread the word. Share the news. We're trying to get bigger. We're trying to get better. We want to grow up. We want to grow this little radio project we have here into a much bigger progression. Mark and Nate, final comments, 15 seconds.
Go Cavaliers.
Appreciate you guys having me on, and go Thunder.
There you go, guys. Listen, we want to thank everybody for putting up with us tonight. We'll see you bright and early Sunday morning. So long, everybody.